Welcome to Securing America with me, Frank Affney, the program that's a kind of owner's manual for protecting the country we love against all enemies, foreign and domestic, to the glory of God and His kingdom. His kingdom is a topic that is very much on my mind these days, specifically the part of the kingdom that He has entrusted to us to manage, to be stewards for. That would be this planet. That would be the various land, water, air elements, and the creatures that inhabit them all. This is biblical. But if you don't particularly believe in God, if perhaps you believe instead in Mother Nature or simply natural processes, you may feel more inclined to believe that we're not so much stewards of all of this. We are supposed to be essentially removed from it, preferably in large numbers, because people who tend to hold this view regard excess population as an undue burden on the planet, something that must be alleviated by, well, I'm afraid, the mass destruction of those who currently inhabit the planet. If this sounds beyond belief, if this sounds certainly unachievable, we're going to entertain the proposition that far from being beyond belief or unobtainable, this is a grand design that is underway and being advanced, among other things, by something called natural asset companies, a device of the United Nations currently being championed by the Biden administration, and as we speak, perilously close to being approved by a Securities and Exchange Commission run by a zealot of radical environmentalism known as Gary Gensler, the chairman of the SEC. And what would happen if this new rule, as it's called, proposed by the New York Stock Exchange and something called the Intrinsic Exchange Group, with whom it turns out it's partnered, to effect dramatic changes in our access to the natural resources of our marvelous planet, but most especially the part of it we're proud to call the United States of America, is the topic for an extraordinarily timely and I think quite informative conversation with one of the smartest guys I know, certainly about this topic and more generally, energy security. And that would be our friend and colleague, Dave Walsh. Dave is a man who has earned his chops as a president of Mitsubishi Power Group, among other senior executive positions in the energy industry. These days, he is one of the principals in the Togota Group, an energy consulting firm. You know him perhaps best because, in addition to his appearances from time to time here, he is a regular guest on Steve Bannon's show, on War Room. And he is regarded, I believe, by everyone who is a sentient human being as a go-to resource on these sorts of matters. And we're very, very happy to be able to go to him for this full hour of conversation about not just these natural asset companies, but about the larger agenda that is afoot here and why it is imperative that you be informed about it and you be engaged in opposing it at every turn. That's the brief. Let's turn to our friend David Walsh. Dave, it's great to have you back, and thank you for joining us on the occasion of the closing of the comment period with the Securities and Exchange Commission. There's another 2 weeks in which people will be able, apparently, to rebut what has been put into the comment pages And I gather there's quite a number of comments at this point, thanks in part to your good help and those of others of us. But help us level set, Dave, before we get too far into the weeds. How would you describe a natural asset company and its purpose?
Well, the way it was set forth, and the organization that kicked this off, the IEG, was actually an adjunct of the Rockefeller Foundation. So this didn't really start with the SEC. It was taken to them as an idea by investors, by clever investors in the Rockefeller Foundation, as a mechanism to get at the probably largest public-owned treasure trove of value in the world, and that's government-owned lands, be they federal-owned, other sovereign nation-owned, state-owned, municipal-owned, city-owned. Oh, we just saw the governor of New York take over the National Football League just a few days ago, owing to the power of government by canceling a pro football game, first time since November 24, 1963, 2 days after JFK was assassinated. Last time we had football canceled in mass. Well, the governor of New York has now stepped in to take this role on. But this is owing here. So we have business taking to government a scam to get at the treasure, the massive treasure trove, probably $60 trillion of value globally of public owned lands, and finding a clever way to transit the ownership, basically the ownership of those in the longer run, into private equity hands. And in publicly traded companies that the SEC and unbelievably the NYSE jump on board with immediately. A way to get away from the hard knocks of measuring cash flows and EBITDA, but measuring the intrinsic value of the blocking mechanism of keeping people from using land productively to somehow assign value to it, non-monetarily, but through the value of the air, the views, the vistas, the fact of the carbon sinks, the fact of the lakes and rivers on these public lands being so valuable as a feature of nature. And through that, blocking others from using that land productively for mining, for resource extraction, for oil recovery, for farming, of a modern variety of farming, to block that as a mechanism of creating value and using to do that. Not I've got accounting in my background. I was a CPA early in my life. I'm a reformed CPA.
But not recovering CPA is what we call it.
Yeah. Recovery using the United Nations System of Environmental Economic Accounting or Ecosystem Accounting Framework. Instead of GAAP, instead of measuring cash flows, because these kinds of enterprises, these NACs, won't generate any cash flow value or any earnings or any dividends to value them on. But instead, you have to leech to this ecosystem accounting framework developed by the United Nations to come up with a surrogate value that the stock exchange just jumped all over. And this is what's really frustrating about this. These are formerly our people, capitalists, you would think, who, oh, yeah, we really don't like the fact that so many of these good companies are measured on something as objective as earnings. Let's look at something like this as a way of measuring value that we don't have to punish companies that don't make earnings. Instead, have this intrinsic value of carbon credits and whatnot used to value an enterprise. This was the most shocking thing about this emerging into my way of thinking, and that is the immediate abandonment by the SEC of the notion of cash flows, EBITDA, dividends that you won't have through NACs, companies controlling assets and not using them except to block others, not creating cash flow value. But so let's create this ecosystem accounting framework to measure the value creation and hose shareholders, the SEC,
among other people, shareholders. Yeah, shareholders on the one hand, but also, property, holders for that matter. We have to take a short break. We're going to come right back with Dave Walsh on more about these NACs and what they would mean for you if these guys get away with it. Stay tuned.
This is Frank Gaffney with the Secure Freedom Minute. Former Joint Chiefs Chairman Mark Milley has rightly been excoriated for promising to warn his Chinese counterpart if President Trump decided to attack Communist China. Yet, the Biden White House has made such Milley malfeasance a hallmark of its retaliatory attacks in Yemen for the Houthis' jihad on U.S. and other shipping. The effect of routinely telegraphing our punches is to expend armaments we can't afford to squander on targets vacated by forewarned enemy personnel. Such behavior dangerously encourages the contempt Iran and its proxies feel for a United States that is unwilling to use decisively its superior power. Team Biden is also insisting that the government of Israel engage in similar self-restraint in its truly existential war with Iran surrogates and assorted other genocidal Sharia supremacists. America can ill afford such self-defeating military malpractice. The Israelis have a right to reject it categorically. This is Frank Gaffney.
Welcome back. We are visiting with our guru on energy security matters, who has learned a lot in a short period of time about a phenomenon that threatens not only our energy security, but our food security and possibly the national security of the United States, and for reasons that we will be talking about momentarily with him. Dave Walsh is his name. He is these days a principal with Dakota Group and a very prominent public figure when it comes to matters involving the green agenda and what it is actually doing to not only this country, but others around the world. You were just talking, I didn't know this about you, but it's very helpful, I think, that you have a background in accounting, because one of myriad fraudulent aspects of this whole enterprise, Dave, seems to me to be that they had to cook up some new accounting scheme that has nothing to do with the generally accepted accounting principles that govern, you know, free market capitalism by and large. So just a further word on, can they pull this off where they basically are, well, I call it engaged in alchemy, turning air, for example, into gold?
Well, if the SEC and the NYSE back this, and they have vigorously to date, they've been in the middle of promoting this idea. Yeah, this can get done, shockingly get done. Here's, just to dwell on this a little bit further in my own life's work, here's a very fine book called In the Public Interest. Harvey Kapnick was the chairman of one of the big eight public accounting firms, the one I worked for years ago. In the Public Interest is a series of lectures and articles he wrote about fairness in public reporting of results from private enterprise, and how important that was that the SEC paid careful attention to the hard work of auditors doing God's work, reviewing financial statements that were about income. Now we're talking about having to...
In the public interest.
In the public interest. Yeah. Very fine book. In the public interest. The essence of public accounting, the essence of fairly reported numbers, income statements, balance sheets, the things we know. But no, now we're going to leak over to, we don't like that, so we're going to leak over to ecosystem accounting framework. And again, this is the world of putting voodoo accounting on carbon credits and things like this that don't generate any current income. By the way, the equity value of most green companies in the last year has gone down 25 to 30%. Those that are publicly traded, again, owing to renewables have zero value, real energy value, close to zero. Very hard to make money selling equipment that provides energy, electricity, only 20 to 30% of the time, and you don't know when that's going to happen. So EVs, the like, losing scads of money. Siemens Energy, EV companies, Ford, GM, all losing tons of money in this stuff. Because
so just to ask the obvious question, so how do they continue to prosper and seemingly grow like Topsy?
Well, government incentives, but there aren't enough incentives. Yeah, subsidies. Because when you're talking about equipment that's energy deficient 70% of the time, just in rough space, the incentives needed need to be about 70% to make something like that work. And to date, they've only been 30, 35. So the problem is more incentives. And as we speak, Siemens, GE, the car companies aggressively chasing government, oh, the investors in offshore wind farms, mainly from Holland, seeking more incentives from government to top up the difference between the 30% and the 70% they actually need to make these projects work and make them viable instead of real
earnings. So, Dave, one of the things that Joe Biden is running for re-election on was this so-called Inflation Reduction Act, IRA, which had nothing to do with inflation reduction, right. Of course. It was all basically a slush fund for the kinds of things you're talking about here. $1.2 trillion, as I recall, was authorized and appropriated for the purpose. Are you telling me that there isn't enough money in that trough for the kind of subsidies these guys require?
No.
Heavens, help us.
There isn't, because even with 30% subsidies to end users of solar farms, offshore wind farms particularly, and EVs, that's not nearly enough to make the economic proposition of those things viable. And the simple math is that on the electrical generation part, solar and wind, that only generate power 25 to 30% of the time, you've got a 70% deficiency. Therefore, incentives need to be that much to hit neutrality. EVs the same. The hidden inducements with EVs are close to 80% already. The numerous layered on hidden incentives in EVs that go to manufacturers and buyers of them.
Yeah. You know, for my sins, I listen to Enemy Broadcasting with regularity. That would be National Public Radio. And they had a somewhat extraordinary segment, as I recall, a week or two ago, Dave, in which they were talking about people having difficulty getting these solar panels on their houses supported by the people who installed them, because a lot of them have gone out of business and have turned it over to somebody else, and they may or may not be supporting the original contract, and on it went. And I guess what you've just described is the reason why we're seeing this. This is at the lower end, obviously, of the food chain, but it's doubtless a problem there as well as further up, no?
Well, since you mentioned it, the scam going on locally here in Florida, the other major constituent donor to Governor DeSantis, the insurance companies. You've got the utilities are heavy, heavy donors to him, participants in investing in that stuff. The insurance companies also a legendary major donor who own him and own his policies, have pursued homeowners to not insure them if they put rooftop solar on their home because of the boreholes and the roof damage being caused by solar installers. The homeowners insurers in this state in the last year have banded together and begun to disqualify homeowners who have the temerity to put rooftop solar on their roof because they're damaging their roof. Now, why has this really happened? Because of the collaboration between the insurance companies and the utilities. The utilities want to be in the business exclusively of selling solar power. They don't want it on your roof. They want to build these 75 megawatt huge solar farms and sell it to you for a fortune. They're against rooftop solar, not because it's non-economic, but because it gets in the way of the concession that they want to be the exclusive seller of it.
And this whole idea that you would be generating electricity and you would sell it to them doesn't appeal to them.
They don't like that. They don't really want that. They want to be the owner of mega 75
a monopoly
solar farms.
Yeah. And give us a sense. Just this is an important data point because when we're talking about public lands, or for that matter, private lands, give us a sense of the amount of real estate that is now consumed in the state of Florida with these solar farms.
Well, the announced plans of Florida Power and Light to build 90,000 megawatts of solar, utility scale, not rooftop, they hate that, utility scale solar farms in this state will occupy 1,200 square miles. So Florida Power and Light quickly will become the largest single landowner, in addition to being a regulated utility, will become the largest by far, in a way, landowner in the state, based on using 1,200 square miles to do, you know, what would be a 1,000 megawatt nuclear power plant is about half a square mile, a 1,000 megawatt combined cycle plant is about a quarter square mile. you're talking about 80 to 90 times that property to get the same equivalency of electricity. It's just irrational. But that drives part of the need for these NACs, and that is firms like NextEra, BlackRock, and Summit Carbon Solutions, that's the pipelines that transmit carbon in carbon capture systems, all take huge amounts of real estate. And what better way to get at preferential use to huge amounts of real estate than having the Interior Department approve your NAC having carbon capture pipelines or solar farms? They'll approve that in a nanosecond as a sustainable use of the land.
Yeah, that's a point we're going to come back to. All of this natty business about eminent domain and so on goes over the side as well.
It'll be solved.
Dave Walsh, we're going to come back and we're going to talk more about this carbon capture business and the scam that's underway there. Dave Walsh is our duty expert on energy security, and I hope is yours as well. Stay tuned for more with him right after this.
Night after night, in cities across the country, black-garbed assailants clash with police in the streets, smash windows, and throw Molotov cocktails in an effort to destroy police stations, federal courthouses, and local businesses, all in the name of anti-fascism. Most Americans are now, sadly, all too aware of the movement known as Antifa. But where did they come from? What do they want? And how do we stop their campaign of violent mayhem? The Center for Security Policy Press is proud to present Unmasking Antifa, Five Perspectives on a Growing Threat. This new book looks at the history, ideology, organization, finances, and strategy of Antifa and provides an in-depth analysis for law enforcement officers, policymakers, and the general public. From street fighting tactics of the Black Bloc to fundraising by prominent left-wing foundations, Unmasking Antifa is the go-to guide to understand this elusive and dangerous threat. Get your copy of Unmasking Antifa, Five Perspectives on a Growing Threat at Amazon.com.
Welcome back. We're speaking with Dave Walsh, the man we turn to on matters involving energy security and much more, really. He's got a great head for common sense approaches to most public policy, and particularly that involves things like massive amounts of land expropriated one way or the other for the benefit of the few. The elites, the globalists in many cases. And one such project is this program called Carbon Capture. And I'm told, Dave, that there is in the works now, you were talking about this immense amount of real estate taken up in the state of Florida, 1,200 square miles, that 3,600 miles of tunnels are now being planned for the heartland of the United States, in which they're going to put concentrated carbon dioxide. What on earth is that all about?
It's insanity. We're talking about a region from South Dakota, largely South Dakota, through Iowa into Southern Illinois, creating pipelines, heavy duty, 3 to 4 foot diameter pipeline underground to transmit carbon from ethanol plants, which by themselves are an enormous waste of resource in the country, that we were ever involved in incentivizing the building of ethanol plants that, oh, by the way, to produce about 12% of our gasoline, enormously emit carbon in the hundreds of refineries that are created to create ethanol. So we've discovered a new public trough to dip into, the Biden IRA, to build carbon capture pipelines to take discharge of carbon from otherwise economically valueless ethanol plants and take that carbon and hide it in aquifers and caves subterranean, in often thousands of miles away from the source at a huge, huge cost. So we've got states now being beseeching farm owners, private farm owners, for in eminent domain suits to take over farmlands to bury these pipes under the hundreds of miles of pipe. Summit Carbon Solutions being one, BlackRock being another big investor in these, taking advantage of the carbon capture credits in the Biden IRA to begin building these. And even some friendly governors, such as Governor Noem, fully supporting this happening. It's incredibly sad. Huge, huge waste of money. Just for the record, man-caused carbon is 2 to 3% of the total generation of carbon. The rest of it is naturally emanating. Carbon in the atmosphere is only 0.004% of the total atmospheric content. So capturing it is a fool's errand and will do nothing for mankind. Nothing.
So. You know, I'm sure you're familiar with this book by one of our colleagues, Gregory Wrightstone, entitled A Very Convenient Warming, in which he basically makes the case, he's with the CO2 Coalition, he basically makes the case that we need more CO2. And it's a good thing when we Absolutely. Have more of it. And here we have our country not only spending money we don't have, but at least to hear our colleague and friend, Representative Steve King, now former member of Congress, talk about it. What we're looking at with these concentrations of CO2 is a positively dangerous operation. He said that this can be explosive. And if there is a leak of, you know, quantities of this concentrated stuff, it can be absolutely toxic to humans and animals as well. And it's my understanding that there's been very little in the way of environmental impact assessments associated with any of this stuff. And again, it just speaks to so many of these other things that we're confronting in this country, Dave. Two sets of laws in effect and law enforcement, some for the Republicans and some for the left-wing environmentalists, often Democrats. Is that a facet of what we're talking about here? It doesn't make sense because we want more CO2. It doesn't make sense because it's unbelievably expensive, and it doesn't make sense because it's positively dangerous to boot.
No, there's no sense that it works. Under the Obama administration, four power plants pursued his incentives to develop carbon capture systems in coal plants and, in one case, a combined cycle power plant. Four efforts. My company was involved in supplying equipment into three of them, Petronova, Plant Berry, Southern Company in Alabama, attempting to build carbon capture systems, pipelines to inject carbon into the aquifer. They were massively unaffordable, $4 billion per power plant. Power plants, it would cost about $1.5 billion to build. Normally, you'd add $4 billion of systems and hardware, claptrap, to attempt to do this. And the further away the aquifer or cave is, the more money you're talking about, because every mile is about $10 million worth of pipeline to move another mile the carbon to the nearest cave or cavern. And unknown that these geologic structures can actually contain the carbon. Completely unknown. I mean, who's gone down there to test the fissures and cracks in the geologic structure to know that the carbon's actually going to be retained there? That can't be easily done and checked. So you have that issue. But the issue of the cost of doing this, just it's a civil engineering project that's just exorbitantly expensive. I mean, if this is done in the power plants that the Biden EPA has now pushed forward, to do this in all power plants in the country, all fossil power plants have to do this by 2040, according to the latest EPA decree, DOE decree. You're talking about
this is all new ones, or it's going to have to be retrofitted on existing
every
ones.
Every existing power plant, which is about 700 power plants in the country, 1,000 megawatts and bigger, that form the basis of our electricity system, will have to spend $4 billion a pop, which we're talking about $700 billion to install these systems or shut down by 2035 to 40.
Oh, my Lord.
That's been announced already.
This is another means of garroting the so-called fossil fuel power
The purpose
systems.
Of this is to terminate the use of fossil fuel for generating electric power, which produce today about 70% of the electricity in the country.
Yeah, and I want you to just
trying to electrify the country at the same time somehow.
Yeah, I want you to give us your short course on baseload power versus the episodic performance of these renewables, and how getting rid of the fossil fuel production capacity of the country is a formula for disaster, Dave Walsh.
Yeah, we have today, this is after years of incentives to build wind and solar. We have 1,152 gigawatts of electrical generating capacity. About 80% of it runs all of the time, is base load. At the present growth projection of wind and solar in the next 9 years, which is about 630 more gigawatts of wind and solar built, very little new combined cycle, and 100 gigawatts of coal being closed, which is projected the next 9 years, we will be, by 2032, at about only 40% of our electrical capacity being dispatchable or base load. And that simply means that a control operator can hit the button, start up a turbine, and know there's going to be electricity. Today is 80% of our electrical load. By 2032, will be 40%. 60% will be in the unknown vicissitude of solar that operates only 5.2 hours a day on average, and wind that operates, if on land, only 7.5 hours a day on average, and therefore doesn't operate the rest of the time, being 90% of what is planned to be built in the next 10 years, which takes us from a baseload energy content today of about 80% to a baseload continuous duty energy content in electricity formation of about 40%. By 2032, meaning reserve margins will be very, very low, and outages and brownouts will be about 15 times more likely than they are today statistically because of running out of electricity, such as is happening again this week in Texas because now of the cold, because it's, 12, 15, 18 degrees. The system is tested for max load on the hottest days, when heat pumps are used, and on the coldest days when furnaces are used, especially here in the Southeast, Texas, Florida. We already have electric heating in spades, and therefore the days of the year that the system is tested for is there enough juice in it are the hottest days and the coldest days, not because of climate change, but because that's when you use the most electricity and you need the most capacity running all the time.
And what you alluded to a moment ago, but needs to be overlaid on top of this, is the whole idea that we're going to become infinitely more reliant on electric vehicles and electric, various equipments and infrastructure. So, I mean, are we, marching towards a post-electrified society, I guess is...
We are.
Way of saying it.
And it's being done intentionally. No, the plans for EVs and home heating in the Northeast and Upper Midwest transiting from gas to electric alone with EVs will double the need for electricity in the country in 20 years. Double the amount of electric generation needed. If I look at what's happening with the additions of solar and wind and the destruction of our coal power plant base, we're only adding in the next 11 years 4.5% to our per kilowatt hours of electrical production. We're adding 4.5%, where across 20 years, we need to be doubling our electrical load because of EVs and home heating. So the policies being enacted here are totally counterintuitive. On the one hand, we have pom-poms and massive incentives out for EVs and home heating and electric water heaters. On the other hand, we're destroying electrical generating capacity by installing part-time equipment.
Yeah,
it's very fundamental.
We have to pause, but when we come back, I just want to get at this idea that this is being planned. This is purposeful. This is by design. And who is the animating force behind this design? And what, in fact, is their ulterior motive? Stay tuned for answers to all those questions with Dave Walsh right after this.
This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. Former Joint Chiefs Chairman Mark Milley has rightly been excoriated for promising to warn his Chinese counterpart if President Trump decided to attack Communist China. Yet, the Biden White House has made such Milley malfeasance a hallmark of its retaliatory attacks in Yemen for the Houthis' jihad on U.S. and other shipping. The effect of routinely telegraphing our punches is to expend armaments we can't afford to squander on targets vacated by forewarned enemy personnel. Such behavior dangerously encourages the contempt Iran and its proxies feel for a United States that is unwilling to use decisively its superior power. Team Biden is also insisting that the government of Israel engage in similar self-restraint in its truly existential war with Iran's surrogates and assorted other genocidal Sharia supremacists. America can ill afford such self-defeating military malpractice. The Israelis have a right to reject it categorically. This is Frank Affney.
We're back, visiting with Dave Walsh for this full hour. It is so chock full of vital information that I'm so pleased to be able to present Dave to you whenever we can get our hands on him. He's much in demand. The Dakota Consulting Group and his various good works for Steve Bannon and us and others are so appreciated. And Dave, I just wanted to drill down on this point. You say it is by design that we're simultaneously seeing this demolishing of much of the electric grid's productive capacity and most important productive capacity. That is, as you say, the baseload power or the stuff that when you flip the switch, it goes on, it produces energy. On the one hand, and simultaneously driving the demand for electricity through the overhead. This sounds satanic to me. It sounds as though there's an actual diabolical agenda at work that is, it can only be described as harmful to our country, its people, our economy, wealth, and our national security, of course, as well. So who's responsible for this design and the agenda?
Well, a curious timing. To good show, great topic. We have Davos kicking off as we're having this discussion. The bad guys are, of course, Macron stands up a year ago and says we're now in the age of scarcity. Get used to things not being available is the meaning of the age of scarcity, meaning things will cost a hell of a lot more than they did before, because they'll no longer be in abundance, things you counted on before, like food, gas, fuel, and electricity. That's what he was talking about. But what's happened over time, you know, the Democrats, the leftists, set the table with programs, be it public housing, be it wind and solar, be it carbon capture, and be it ethanol. Who comes to feast at the table? Our wealthy developers invest in those incentive-driven programs to make money and wind up creating a ring fence around them. And by the way, the NACS is all about investment bankers, BlackRock, and others becoming heavily involved as investors in these NACS because they'll be irresistible. I mean, the total control of public lands by them is incredibly valuable. They know that. And then to not have accounting stand up and say, where's the cash flow and dividends anymore, but ecosystem accounting instead being used, they don't have any accountability to actually make money while they hoard these incredibly valuable assets. So this has basically been a collaboration of government with large investors, which, you know, if you go back,
so-called public-private partnerships that we hear so much about.
The worst kind, that God bless him. If we really look at true populism, Teddy Roosevelt was a heroic figure. Teddy Roosevelt had the wisdom to decide, I'm not sure how he got the wisdom to decide this so early in the history of our country, that Rockefeller, Henry Clay Frick, Andrew Carnegie, DuPont, and Vanderbilt didn't deserve to control 50% of the American economy. He intuitively knew something was the matter with that. And he was a Republican. He was a Republican, but he knew in his heart of hearts, something was intuitively the matter with five wealthy families controlling half of the wealth of the U.S. GDP and the monopoly power they had. We veered away from that now. Now we're in love with Musk. We're in love with Gates, and then Gates
and Rockefeller. Rockefeller is behind a lot of this, like the Knacks.
The original money of the Standard Oil Company still at play, coming up with now Knacks to take over control of public lands.
Teddy Roosevelt would be turning at a fairly high RPM, I think, at the prospect.
So the cabal of the BlackRock's NextEras of the world and the Rockefeller Foundation with socialist Democrat leaders globally, that's a toxic combination. It's an absolutely toxic combination. Davos is one of the forums where they meet and come up with these coterminous plots to take over resources. And, oh, by the way, solve government's issues of being completely out of money in a deficit state, be it Japan, be it Western European countries, all of them, the U.S., the same, desperately seeking ways to retain control by abolishing these deficits through these kinds of programs.
So walk through that slowly. You have huge deficits and debt now, $34 trillion, $37 trillion, I've lost track. Here in the United States alone. And you're telling us that by imputing value to all of these natural resources that are not usable, that the government of the United States could change the balance sheet to enable it to borrow more money?
By coincidence, the theoretical value of public, municipal, community-owned, federal-owned lands in the sovereign governments in Western Europe and here in North America are about $60 trillion. You look at the cumulative public debt of the same countries in those geographic regions is about the same number. They're seizing on this, the government side seizing on this to monetize, as they can, public lands over to BlackRock, to NextEra, whomever, Summit Carbon Solutions, other holding groups, over time to transit that the last remaining major source of wealth actually are those public lands being transited into private equity. The money comes into the coffers of government. Their issues may be solved for a while on deficits. And then the deficits will keep piling up. That's not a permanent solution, but it's a short-term one. Yeah, that's part of this. Absolutely.
This is all going back to who's responsible. This is all being done, you know, under the radar, without public debate. I mean, the fact that they're doing this through the Securities and Exchange Commission, for heaven's sakes. I mean, there's not a single act of Congress that supports any of this, as far as I can tell. In fact, I was told today that there's some statutes on the books that prohibit precisely this kind of transfer of public lands away from states and their responsibility for it. We have to take one last break, Dave, so hold the thought. When we come back, I particularly want to get at this issue of the public interest, as you said in reference to that
in
book.
The public interest.
In the public interest is not what is being done here, folks. Wow. And that means you're going to get the worst end of the deal. We'll talk more about how that shakes out and what we can do about it, what we must do about it, with Dave Walsh on the other side of this short break. Stay tuned, please. Welcome back to this final installment of our very special conversation with Dave Walsh, a great energy security authority and practitioner of the business of energy security, as well at Togota Group Consulting. Let me just ask you, taking this valuable land, water, and air out of productive use. Obviously, may have some upside to the people who are in a position to capitalize on it through especially this artificial accounting system. But what's the downside for the country, Dave?
Well, the downside is putting on the bench 15 to 20% of the country's resource for oil, natural gas, coal. In the new economy, lithium and cobalt and copper needed to make electric vehicle batteries, utility batteries, utility scale relays and grid systems, all of that stuff heavily dependent on cobalt, copper, and lithium to propel typical electrical systems. You're losing all of that. You're losing timber. You're losing arable farmland in great quantities. Arable farmland because, you know, present modern day versions of fertilizers, nitrogen-based and ammonia-based, are hated by the left because they're natural gas-based in origin. Chemical formation of those ammonia nitrogen fertilizers come from natural gas. Therefore, they hate those. You can't do that on these lands. So you're devaluing them. And you're creating short.
I told you might not even be able to hunt on these lands either, because that's not renewable somehow.
Yeah.
So, Dave, go ahead.
We've renamed. We got new nomenclature and everything. The word sustainable is used. That we're making these lands more sustainable by not exploiting them. We're making society itself less sustainable by not having enough electricity, energy, and agricultural products to consume to live.
Yeah. So that's the plan.
The word sustainable.
Yeah. And that's where, again, the agenda of these oligarchs, the Rockefeller types, the Gateses especially, in depopulating the planet is so insidious and again, diabolical. And Dave, one name that has kept coming up in the course of this conversation is BlackRock. And when I think of diabolical, its logo should be next to the term in the dictionary, it seems to me, under Larry Fink. Virtually everything that I can, identify as being particularly bad for America and in the service of our enemies, the Chinese Communist Party, who stand to benefit, let's face it, from locking down our natural resources. BlackRock is in the mix, if not leading the thing, certainly exploiting the opportunities. Is that an overstatement, or does that really seem to be the case?
Well, it is the case. You hit on something really important with these, Frank, and that's the way this has been conceived, this NAC thing by the SEC and NYSE. Foreign investment groups would not be prohibited from owning NACs in this country. Therefore, the CCP would be right away involved through its holding companies as asset owners and equity owners of U.S.-based NACs. And then have access to land that they desperately want to get to build manufacturing facilities here, for example, and to harvest more cobalt and lithium for their own purposes, and to get in the way of the U.S. economy progressing. But BlackRock, you know, is an investment group. They've been very, very amoral about investing in the Chinese defense industry, the Chinese telecommunications industry in China, over here, absolutely immoral and un-American in terms of their investment thesis in supporting
treasonous is a term that I use. Military. Yeah, it is enabling our mortal enemy. And on top of that, you've got this whole ESG agenda, the environment, social justice. This, Dave, I think it's fair to say this natural asset companies exercise takes ESG to a whole new strata in terms of control and the adverse agenda for the economy as well as our society, no?
Because you've taken federal land, you've cleverly not quite sold it, you've transferred it into a 99-year operations and maintenance contract, you know, like the GOCOs were, the nuclear facilities. This would be a transit of ownership, not ownership, but operations and maintenance to a company that has the mission of blocking any deemed deleterious environmental use, so which tends to be a wealthy investment bank, which tends to make it impossible for a new government, a newly elected government, to bifurcate that relationship. Because now you're not just dealing with the Department of Interior, you're dealing with a private owner who's now acquired rights to the air and the land. Therefore, you have hell to pay getting their hands off of that concession.
So those of you who think, folks, listening to all of this, that the election of Donald Trump will enable this whole craziness to be thrown over the side. Not so much. And Dave, this is one of the things that we really appreciate about your clarity on all of these issues, is you are able to look over the horizon at that kind of problem. I know you need to get that phone call. Let me just close by saying, we want to leave you with an action item, folks. The hour is late, but we believe that it is possible for you to still inject your desires, both for the SEC to reject this rule, to create the so-called natural asset companies, and for you to communicate with both your elected representatives on Capitol Hill and the New York Stock Exchange, which should be ashamed of itself for what it's doing here. Talk about the public interest. This is not in the public interest, and they know it's not. We need this reversed. We need any course of action that would ultimately result in this class being approved by the SEC to be stopped. And we need your help to do that, folks. So I want again to commend to you sovereigntycoalition.org, one of the wonderful coalitions that our Center for Security Policy sponsors, as it does the Secure the Grid Coalition, another really important effort to try to make sure that we have the energy we need and that we deserve in this country, and that it is not either squandered or denied us through self-dealing autocrats like the Rockefellers and their ilk. This is a time for you to act. The place that you can do it most conveniently, and I hope with maximal effect, is at sovereigntycoalition.org. I entreat you, don't put it off for another day. We're now in the rebuttal period. This needs to be done forthwith. Thank you for doing that. Thank you, David Walsh, again, for being with us. You've illuminated so much, and we need you to continue to do the illumination, because everybody else is trying to keep us in the dark, that's for sure. Thanks to all of you for joining us. I hope you do so again next time. And until then, you'll go forth and multiply.